say tomorrow matters. Yes, it does.
For KRXA, this is Tomorrow Matters, talk radio for a better tomorrow, the number one location on the Central Coast for environmentally conscious connection. I'm Deborah Lindsay.
And I'm Spencer Lindsay.
And we're the hosts of Tomorrow Matters. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. Well, a good question to ask ourselves is, when is it time to act? Or when is it time to get involved? Is it time when the bills are all paid, when the kids are all out of school, when the dog leaves home? When? When is there enough time to really change the world? And why bother anyway? I mean, we didn't get ourselves into this mess. Why bother spending time getting us out? We might as well just live our lives in quiet complacency. It's easier, it's more fun, and most likely the problems of the world won't be solved by us anyway, so why bother? Well, my guest today would disagree with all of these statements, his philosophy, and I might be bold in presuming this, but right now that our situation is so dire that we must act collectively right now, that action is needed right now from everyone in every place in their lives. And my guest this afternoon is Jan Lundberg, who is an oil industry analyst, also director of Culture Change, which is based out of Arcata, California, and is a speaker at the upcoming Eco City World Summit in San Francisco in April. Welcome, Jan.
Thank you, Deborah.
Yeah. So you probably do disagree with the statement that we can't get involved. Why bother? It doesn't involve us.
But I like the way you put it because, getting inside the heads of the average person and asking ourselves these questions is very important. We have such amazing ecological challenges going on right now with the related economic crises and resource limitations, that it is really time to question business as usual and the entire system and culture that we operate under.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, Jan, I'm wondering now, most of the people who are listening to my show understand the concept of peak oil, but there might be some new listeners. Will you just give us a quick overview of what that means?
Yes. The world is at its approximate peak of global oil extraction. So peak oil for short means that we've just reached the point where the world cannot put out more petroleum that we refine and burn and spill. So the implications of this is that we're going to be no longer in growth mode because it's been petroleum that's fueled economic growth for many decades now. And the evidence for peak oil is fairly solid. The implications of it are something I prefer to focus on because I don't want to get caught up in the debate of whether peak oil is actually here now or if a big new find of oil or maybe Iraq being maximized for oil extraction, you know, all these questions. It's easy for people to get caught up in debate and uncertainty and just walk away from an issue because there's some disagreement and every opinion's is valid and so there's somebody who understands peak oil and there's somebody who says it's a crock, so there's a 50-50 chance that it's
right.
All meaningless.
And
so how is Culture Change involved in this discussion about peak oil?
Well, it was back when I started Culture Change under the name Fossil Fuels Policy Action back in 1988 that someone who was aware of peak oil before I was. Now, I was coming from the oil industry. I was pretty well known to the news media at the time. And so when this editor of Population and Environment saw my picture in USA Today with a headline that said, Lundberg lines up with nature, she called me up and said, there's a book called Beyond Oil, The Threat to Food and Fuel in the Coming Decades. Would you review it? And I said, of course. Right. And so that opened my eyes. And I was very glad to learn about the peak, and I had always questioned how long the U.S. could consume 100 billion gallons of gasoline every year. You know, I wondered, how can the Earth give this up, and how can the environment keep taking all this punishment? And so I learned some other things from that book about comparing energy, and the energy profit ratio concept is there, and also the idea that there is no technological fix for oil,
right,
that will fully substitute for it. And so I've been working on that ever since 1988.
Mm-hmm.
And our idea was maximum conservation. And to do this, we had a long-running program, a campaign to stop new road construction. So the Alliance for a Paving Moratorium, and we made a little noise during the first Gulf War about energy security and not lengthening our oil supply lines. I mean, if you're in a war, you don't lengthen the supply lines by keep building more and more roads.
Right.
And so we ended up publishing the Auto Free Times magazine. So we had things in there. That was a national and international journal that did talk about peak oil from time to time, but interest was very low. It wasn't until Richard Heinberg's book, The Party's Over, came out that a mass audience started developing.
Mm-hmm.
But we're aware of it and working on it all this time and thinking about tools of sustainability for when we had what I have been calling lately petrol collapse.
And you were just recently speaking with the candidates that are running for presidency right now about peak oil in Washington, didn't you?
Well, they're energy staffers, yes.
Mm-hmm. And how did that go? How was it received?
Very well received. I followed the team of Robert Hirsch and Roger Zeldin.
Mm-hmm.
Zezbeck. It's a difficult name, sorry.
Okay.
And they are preeminent peak oil analysts, and they did blaze the trail there and open up some possibilities for further understanding and contacts. In my visits, I decided to also link the issue of peak oil to plastics.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because that's a form of petroleum that we're just spewing around the planet. It's poisoning the oceans. It's poisoning our health.
Right.
And it's a very convenient way to start talking about peak oil and climate change and war for oil. So that's why here in San Francisco, where I'm sitting here at the Department of Environment right now, over at City Hall, we're about to have our peak oil preparedness task force meeting, our regular monthly meeting shortly. And this is the city that made history and banned plastic petroleum shopping bags.
Right.
Yes. Congratulations on that.
Well, it took a few years, but other cities are following suit, Oakland and others.
Mm-hmm.
Janet, can you tell us a little bit about the task force that you're the meeting you're about to go into? It's interesting. I'd like to maybe see if we could get our mayors to look into that.
Yes, a few cities around the country have passed peak oil resolutions, and San Francisco was the first. For this one, there was recognition of the threat of peak oil and the need to adopt the oil depletion protocol, which Richard Heinberg and Dr. Colin Campbell have been working on.
Right.
And the resolution did call for a task force, and so it was last October that the task force was assembled. There are seven of us, and the areas we're concentrating on are energy, transportation, food, societal functioning, architecture and building, economy, and infrastructure.
And you're trying to figure out exactly what it is or how you're going to live without the same inputs of fossil fuels that we have now.
Right.
And how's it coming along? I mean, are you actually making changes, or is it just discussions at this point?
Well, it's discussion and planning. We are tasked with giving a report to the Board of Supervisors, and we'd like to do more than that. There is going to be one large public meeting, and we're going to put out a letter or a call to civil society to get involved and for people to take this on themselves and not mm-hmm. wait for government to do something.
Well, and that's that personal powering down that Richard Hindberg talks about. Is that what you mean as far as people getting involved, or?
Well, sure. You know, powering down, you can do that individually, and we can live the future now, which is certainly what I advocate. We're asking people in this letter to think about how they are living now with all this abundant energy that is being wasted and is highly polluting and is coming from distant countries, and what life will be like when we're suddenly perhaps without the means of driving to work or getting the products from stores that have the food being trucked in. So these are
access to clean water.
All of these things. Everything is running like akin to the Y2K perceived crisis.
Right.
And so we do have resource limits. We are at the approximate peak in global oil extraction. The technological fixes are many, but are on a very limited basis for usually local application. There is no seamless transition to go into a green consumer economy. I personally think it's impossible, and we are going to see the system under great strain, and people will be having to walk away from their materialist consumer culture and meeting their neighbors and seeing what they're going to do to get some local food production going.
You know, and Jan, when we come back, because we need to take a very quick break, I'd like you to tell us what you mean by a green consumer economy and also why we're not really hearing more about this from the press. But we do need to take a very quick break. It's Deborah Lindsay and Spencer Lindsay on KRXA. My guest this afternoon is Jan Lundberg, who is speaking at the EcoCity World Summit in April, is also the founder of Culture Change. And if you'd like to call in and ask a question, we'd love to hear from you. The number here is 899-KRXA. That's 899-5792, or toll free at 888-579-2540. We'll be right back.
Peace bomb, new John, peace bomb, new John, peace bomb, new John, peace bomb.
George Chavez of Chavez Jewelry Design specializes in recycling and restoring old jewelry, whether it's old broken jewelry or simply an item which no longer suits you. George invites you to actively participate in the creative process and to personally direct the creation of that special piece of jewelry that is truly and uniquely you. You'll find George weekdays 11 to 7 at Chavez Jewelry Design, 1418 Freedom Boulevard in Watsonville. Questions? Give George a call at 768-8004. That's 768-8004.
Tomorrow Matters is sponsored in part by Monterey Salinas Transit. Help improve the environment and fight global warming by riding the bus. Whether you are going to work, school, shopping, or recreational activities, MST is the green alternative to driving your car. Across the U.S., public transit saves 4 million gallons of fuel each day. And when you take the bus, you're producing 95% less carbon monoxide and 50% less CO2. You can show that tomorrow matters to you by taking the bus instead of driving. Monterey Salinas Transit. The smart choice for a better environment.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in SoCal Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in a friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Ray of frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive and Porter Street in SoCal.
We all have dreams, and dreams inspire possibilities in our lives. for many of us. One of our principal dreams is to live in harmony with our natural environment, to convert that sacred space we call home into a physical representation of our true nature.
Hi, I'm Peter Eichhorn, owner of Eichhorn Incorporated, a company dedicated to designing and creating of ecologically sound masonry projects to fulfill your particular desires and needs. Let me work with you to make your dreams real and your dwelling an enchanting, personalized home, one with nature, a true reflection of your inner desires. Make this New Year special, and let me assist you in your quest. I have a lifetime of experience, I'm honest, my prices are affordable, and I love what I do. Call me at 393-1300. That's 393-1300.
And we're back. This is Deborah and Spencer Lindsay on KRXA Tomorrow Matters. It's 2:21, and my guest this afternoon is Jan Lundberg, and we're talking about peak oil. And Jan, in particular, when we were leaving in the break, I asked you why the press is not really talking about this very much, and if they are talking about it, they're really downplaying it.
Well, they want to sell cars. They want to keep the growth bubble going. They are part of the whole societal, crowd control policy to keep people distracted with little bits of news that are fragments of the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing the big picture is not the purpose of the corporate media.
No.
Well, but in this case, I mean, this is something that is threatening our society on a severe, severe level. And you would think that they might just come out and say, all right, put some food away or, reach across the fence and say hello to your neighbor, maybe have a potluck together. But they're not doing any of that.
It's like, why would Macy's department store do that either? Mm-hmm.
They could sell some things. I mean, they could, stock up now for the end of the world.
Yeah.
How does this go into the concept of a green consumer economy?
Well, see, that's what is supposedly around the corner. And if we don't have that, does that mean it's the end of the world? No. We're going to have a sustainable culture if we're going to survive at all. If our species isn't going to go extinct from all the crazy things we're doing and how we're overpopulating the planet and
right.
fouling our nest, then we are going to find suddenly that with the age of cheap energy behind us and the need to utilize our local ecosystems within ecological carrying capacity and utilizing our skills and being communities once again, well, that's when we'll have our transformation to what will be a new culture, but it will also be heavily drawing upon our real legacy and our some surviving traditions. I mean, we evolved as tribes,
mm-hmm.
right.
and so we've been turned into a globalized mass of workers who are very specialized and are kept separated and alienated, and that is very convenient for manipulators who want to sell us another war or to sell us keep on shopping and watch out for the latest boogeyman.
Right. It's conditioned orange, Jan, right?
Yeah,
hey, you know, I have a question. I heard you kind of hesitate when you use the word transition, and I think all of us kind of hesitate a little bit when we think about a transition from being able to jump in the Benz and drive down to Starbucks for a cup of coffee and then jet over to work in San Jose and have our computer job and then jet back and get a beer at the local bar and then go home. That's not a reality I guess there's going to be some kind of a unpleasant change, I think. And my question is are we looking at like, what do you see as a future, and when do you see it happening?
Well, the conditions are getting stronger and stronger for this big change, and I don't see a particular date. I think that the oil market could go crazy at any moment. There could be a development in the Persian Gulf. There could be the equivalent of some bigger Katrinas. There could be financial meltdown. But on the whole, we have, the end of this era taking shape right now, and it's important for people to think for themselves, take action, and liberate themselves from the the manufactured path or treadmill that they were put on.
So you're saying there's no techno fix, because I think that people are really hoping that there is a techno fix and that it might be coming in the form of biodiesel or hydrogen
or electric cars.
Yes,
or...
right, and that's what our website culturechange.org looks at very frequently.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I went to the presidential candidates' energy staffers, I tried to hammer home the idea that there will not be a technological fix to allow for a seamless transition. And they mm-hmm. seem to be ready to accept that. I have run into greater resistance elsewhere, such as, you know, Rotary Club's mm-hmm. speeches or whatever. We're just going to have to face the fact that without the national leadership that we should be getting, and without the kind of a closer community culture where we can depend on each other for goods and services and the support we need, we're going to be using petroleum and spending our way to a very rude awakening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now I have I want you to make me feel better now. Okay.
Okay.
Let's say that Deborah and I convince Pacific Grove voters and everyone that that we need to go completely solar. And that we need to begin to build our own, you know, have our own food. Growing in our yards, or getting it directly from Salinas, not importing anything. We start to make the change now. This change happens. We can have that green economy that you're saying we can't have if we make our changes sooner.
Yeah, well, we're going to be arriving at green economics, but there isn't going to be a global green consumer economy where we're going to be doing the same things we're doing.
Oh, I see.
With some technological fixes.
Mm-hmm.
People read things that give them false expectations that the status quo will just continue.
Right.
People hear how much oil there is in Venezuela, but it happens to be very heavy oil.
Mm-hmm.
They hear about tar sands, but then we see misleading information about that. So we're past the peak of cheap conventional petroleum,
mm-hmm.
and so we're up against a time of imminent change, but the change is going to be lifestyle,
mm-hmm.
and that is also the answer to our global warming dilemma, because just making more technology and finding better products that may be more efficient and trying to reform the system, unfortunately, is too little and too late.
Mm-hmm.
We have to unplug the global warming machine. We have to stop driving.
Right.
It's been shown that hybrid cars involve more energy overall in the whole life cycle than an internal combustion
oh,
car.
No.
Yes. So, and what are those hybrids relying on? Well, they're relying on asphalt, tires, plastics, unhealthy lifestyles of sedentary living. Crashes will continue. We have 1 million animals being killed on U.S. roads every day. so in this country. So that's something that you know, we haven't been looking at. So when we look at what is up ahead, you can say yes, there's going to be green economics, and we can do many things right now. But it's important for people to look at the stark truth of our massive dependence today, which is not sustainable.
Mm-hmm. And Jan, we're going to continue this conversation when we come back. We have a commercial that we need to run to. This is Deborah and Spencer Lindsay on KRXA Tomorrow Matters. When we come back, we have some callers who have some questions. This is KRXA 899-5792. That's 899-KRXA, or toll free at 888-579-2540. We'll be right back.
In one fell swoop, Nostradamus got it going into therapy group. Charlton Heston was banished to the planet of the apes after all.
When you take a breath, 80% of the oxygen you're breathing is created by plankton, a job which could be compromised if plastics continue to crowd the surface waters of our oceans. There are now areas of the Pacific 2 times the size of Texas where plastic outnumbers plankton 6-1. Save Our Shores is a marine conservation organization dedicated to educating and activating our community. To keep plastics out of our oceans, visit saveourshores.org or call 831-462-5660.
Looking for ways to improve and beautify your landscape with sound environmental practices and enjoy seasonal produce from your own land? Well, Tree of Life Ecological Services offers landscaping and design to suit your specific garden needs, large or small. Contact Tree of Life Ecological Services at treeoflifees.com or call 831-566-EDEN. That's 566-3336.
I love coffee, I love tea. That's why Coffeetopia's the place for me. Coffee and tea, my honey and me. At Coffee, Coffee, Coffeetopia.
Coffeetopia at 1723 Mission Street and 3701 Portola Drive in Santa Cruz offers the finest in handcrafted espresso drinks, whether it's a traditional Italian-style cappuccino or a sweet caramel macchiato. We offer a range of full-leaf teas, a choice of chais, including our new Zawadi African chai, and organic coffees. Coffeetopia also carries local baked goods fresh daily, including French-style pastries. Or try a toasted bagel with one of our exclusive non-dairy bagel spreads, either garlic dill or smoked tofu. Coffeetopia, Santa Cruz's oldest internet cafe, offers both free wireless and computer terminals for those who need them. Coffeetopia. Remember, we're here to help.
Coffee, coffee, Coffeetopia.
KRXA 540 AM is the home of Cal State University Monterey Bay basketball. Hi, this is Rob Ponce, the voice of the CSUMB Otters, inviting you to join KRXA as we bring you the best of NCAA Division II basketball with the CSUMB Otters.
Otters are playing in the first CC2A playoffs, fourth seed in the first round, hosting Dominguez Hills at the Kelp Bed. Join us on Tuesday at 6:40 on KRXA 540.
And we're back. This is Deborah Lindsay on KRXA Tomorrow Matters, and that is Kipchoge and the Ginger Ninjas. They are a local band out of the Tahoe area, the Nevada City area. And as you know, this show is always local music, so you can send in your music to Deborah Lindsay at KRXA 540. And my guest this afternoon is Jan Lundberg, and we're talking about peak oil and various green economies, not. And I have some callers that are on the line that would like to ask a question. I have Z from Monterey. Hi, Z.
Yeah, hi. How you doing?
Hi.
Great show as usual.
Thank you.
Yeah, I had met you way back when I was upset about the when they were had the alternative energy conference down at that you sponsored down by Lake Elistoe.
Yeah, do you have a question
anyway,
for our guest, Z?
What's that?
Do you have a question for our guest today?
Yeah, I do, yeah. He's talking about the green, you know, switching to green and all that.
Yes.
I've been making an effort in that besides not driving and using the bus for
Okay, anyway, do you have a question?
The question is, why does it take so long for any of these companies to make that connection when we've got ample biofuel alternatives, and it's not just corn and wheat?
Okay.
You know, that excuse they use. What happened to the switchgrass proposal that Dumbo proposed? It's going nowhere fast. And then Iran's about to cut
us
off.
Okay, Z, thanks so much. We're going to ask Jan his answer to that question.
Yeah,
thanks.
Okay.
So, Jan, did you hear what he was asking?
Okay. The first part of the question is why aren't companies changing? We have a very short-term way of thinking. It's the next quarterly report that matters to the corporations and government bureaucracies. But as to the specifics that the caller brought up about biofuels, that really is not going to be the next big thing for our energy economy. It turns out that apart from the low return on energy invested that we get out for our energy needs or perceived needs, it really has a lot to do with how the soil is unable to be mined and exploited as never before. It's not going to happen. Farmers will not allow it, and Mother Nature can't handle it. You see, there is no extra biomass that will be lying around to be collected, and it is so unfeasible to collect and process this that if it goes a significant number of miles, the transportation of it alone will eat up the energy gain from the process of making the biofuel. So biofuels, as with many other forms of energy, most of which just supply electricity, these do not begin to substitute for oil. So the answer is not technological, but lifestyle change. We have to question, what do we really need all this energy for?
Mm-hmm. Right. Jan, have you followed the Yes Men? Have you seen these guys?
Somewhat. They're funny, yeah.
They're one of the things that they did with the Exxon's climate victim candles. You're talking about extra biomass sitting around. And one of the things that they proposed in this Exxon conference was that there's going to be climate victims from our climate change. We're going to have more Katrinas. We're going to have more death and destruction. And there's going to be a lot of bodies around. And so why don't we just make oil out of these victims? And that's where the extra biomass is. It's all in the people, you know.
Well, I'm not going to touch that one.
No, I don't think you should touch that one. And then we had another caller.
Dan called in and asked, he had a suggestion and wanted to know what you thought about this. When we have carbon credits and carbon limits, he says that we should probably make a distinction between carbon that came out that went into the planet 20 million years ago and carbon that went into the planet or when from trees or from fireplaces or from cow farts or whatever, you know.
Well, see, this is how they get the idea of carbon neutral. People are saying, oh, biofuels are carbon neutral. Because even though we're burning all this stuff and it goes up in the air, when we grew it, we pulled it out of the sky. So,
right.
Yeah, but you know, the petroleum in the ground, that came out of the sky, too. So,
that's sunlight, right.
You know, it doesn't make much sense to me to play games with what we have to do to start protecting the atmosphere. It's just like toxics. You can't say, well, we're putting out a little less mercury into the environment over here, so that makes it okay for more to be put out over there. You know, the world is not so infinite.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we're up against is the limits of the world. And I'm wondering what type of social and cultural changes you think are necessary now for us to meet the challenges of climate change and peak oil.
Well, I believe there are so many vital and exhilarating things we can do that people really just need to get together and try their best to extricate themselves from the system. And if they can do that through not having to spend as much time earning money to buy more things, that is a very good thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And if enough people don't buy new cars, it would bring an end to this whole polluting economy in a matter of months.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not a bad thing when you consider that collapse is inevitable anyway. We're running against up against all these limits. But we may as well start living a better way now with personal connections, with more community, getting more exercise, and knowing that we're preparing for the future and not polluting so much.
Right. And if you're a smoker and you drink coffee, you better start growing tobacco and coffee plants.
Coffee beans in your backyard. Listen, but I want to just dissect this idea of bringing the collapse closer or sooner to us, because it's coming anyway. And you know, the extricating ourselves from the system and not going out there and doing our part to encourage the economy. I mean, this is a really scary concept, Jan, because collapse means that there may be starvation. Most likely is absolutely going to be starvation. There's going to be, and absolutely will be, chaos and, you know, a breakdown of our infrastructure, both security-wise and banking and all of these things. And, you know, I think it's a little easier to imagine that we go through this in a managed decline, much like what Richard Hindberg says, in, you know, reducing our consumption by 3% per year as a way to match the decline rate of the peak of the slope of the rate of decline of fossil fuels.
It would be nice.
Yeah. I mean, but you don't seem to have any confidence in that proposal?
Well, for one thing, the oil industry is not set up for shrinkage and an orderly retreat. It's mm-hmm. only built for growth, just like the whole economy. And my knowledge of the oil industry from many, many years is that it has to have ongoing massive throughputs, and that the people in the industry only understand a growing pie and plenty of profits, that it all goes against the idea of a constriction or a scaling back.
But wouldn't you say that we're already somewhat in the beginning throes of a scaling back right now? I mean, with the economy in its sluggish form.
Well, what I'm trying to get at is to let people know that the oil industry, the way it's set up, is not automatically, or even with a lot of effort, going to start putting out 5% less product this month, 7% less product the next month, 10%, you know, and so on, following this bell curve. Because when people start to learn about peak oil, they understand that it's a bell curve. Mm-hmm. And that was true with oil fields, the way Marion King Hubbard calculated it. But when you extend peak oil to global, which has never happened before, and we're there now, my analysis is that it's not going to be a mirror image decline on the other side of the peak.
Mm-hmm.
It may be more of a cliff, because what the oil market does, it has these skyrocketing prices, and there is panic buying all of consumers of all sorts, and there's hoarding.
Mm-hmm.
And things happen that aren't intended, but are going to have massive consequences. It will be out of control.
Mm-hmm.
Just think of all the cars out there. If 200 million vehicles in this country are suddenly topped off because they think prices are going to go from $4.50 a gallon to $5 a gallon tomorrow, what does that do to the supply?
Well, it goes.
It dries up
mm-hmm.
entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we have enough days of this where people can't get to jobs, when the trucks don't pull into Walmart or Safeway, there is going to be a lot of havoc, dislocation, and I don't think the government is going to be able to step in with some fine programs to spare us from austerity and deprivation.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so, you know, this is where it comes to us right now to start making the changes in our lives. So answering my own question or my own statement in the beginning of the show was, when is it time? Well, it's time absolutely right now. Jan, we have another caller. It's Chris on the phone. Hi, Chris.
Hello. Yeah, I'm the reported technologist in the household, and I fully believe that we are in the throes of dealing with the last of our big fuel ages. If you look at our fuel ages, you know, we went from wood to coal, and from coal to oil, and there's, you know, it seems like about 100 years of change in between each of those. You know, you go back 300 years, we were burning wood.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at it in the future, I believe that technology is what is going to save us, if you will. I wouldn't say save us as much as it is. It's going to shift us into a new paradigm. I mean, the whole idea of electric transportation has been around for a long time, but not fully touted. I mean, when you look at a freight train running down the line, realize that it's getting 442 miles to the gallon for a gallon of gas, you know, for moving a ton of material. One ton, the equivalent of your car, one gallon, 442 miles. If we could just get one quarter of that on the average vehicle, and if we could improve, you know, airliners by half of what the mileage that they're getting, that would be beginning huge leaps and bounds.
Do you have a question, Chris?
Well, it was more just that I think that technology is what we need to really look at and work with technology as quickly as we can. And we may be on our decline, but I believe it's the decline of one fuel source and the shift to another.
Okay.
Right. And we don't have to, you know, use an energy source other than our own bodies with our technology. I mean, look at the lever.
Okay. Spencer, there's not enough profit in that.
Thanks, Chris.
Exactly. Thank you, Deborah.
Okay. There's not enough profit in using our own bodies?
Right. Well, that's why we have a culture change ahead. We're going to have new values and, you know, give up on the false promise of infinite wealth for a growing economy.
And we've already had economies that were based on our own bodies being able to do the work, and we couldn't feed 6.5 billion people when that was a time. We couldn't even feed 2 billion people when we were relying just on our physical bodies to do the work.
Right.
I mean,
Right. The only reason we made those 6 billion people is because we had the energy to
and the ability
to sow the planet with corn and wheat and meat
that we could harvest that much,
right.
You know, and pump the water to all of that.
We're like any other species. I mean, if you have enough energy and enough resources, a species will continue to grow until it bumps up against
some kind
of a problem.
That's right. It's like, as Richard Heinberg says, it's like the yeast in the wine. You know, when it starts to die in its own waste, that's where we are right now.
Oh gosh, that's pleasant.
It's a lovely thought.
Wow. Everyone tune in to Tomorrow Matters.
Jan, do you have anything to add?
Well, I'd like to wish everyone a global warming day. And the music of the Depavers, a band I've been in, is on culturechange.org. And I would like to hear from people who want to do something about plastics. We have some materials and some suggestions, and we have some other programs. We have a pledge for climate protection that we can share with people. I encourage people to get in touch with us at Culture Change, and we can keep spreading the word and preparing for the future.
Thank you. And Jan, if people want to get a hold of you to talk about this task force that you're doing in San Francisco, I mean, how could they do that? How could they reach you?
Well, the task force does have a website through its sfgov.org/environment.
Okay.
And we're going to be improving that soon. But the best thing to do is contact culturechange.org. There's a phone and a P.O. box and a website the email through there. And I will route any inquiries. And we encourage contributions of thought and involvement. And I hope in all your areas where you are and all the listeners that they will consider banning plastic bags, banning plastic water bottles, getting a P-Coil commission going in the community, and taking action.
I just have one question about the P-Coil commission. Do you believe that it's better to work on a town level or on a board of supervisors level?
Well, it's almost the same thing. Mm-hmm. Here in San Francisco, the city and the county are the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Local government is always best. It is going to come down to community. It's just that when it gets to be many, many thousands of people, you're starting to deal with strangers.
Mm-hmm.
It gets very unwieldy, and people don't trust as well. So that's something for you just to work out.
Right. And some people have said in the conversations that I've been in have pointed out that they're not so worried about us learning how to do the skills of growing our own food or, feeding little creatures, animals, bunnies, cows, and things like this. They're more concerned about the interpersonal relationships between people and coming back and trying to figure out how to use consensus models and any thoughts on that?
Well, the Native Americans of this hemisphere,
mm-hmm,
had societies going for thousands and thousands of years. This isn't to say they didn't have some problems and there weren't some mistakes and atrocities made, but they had an intact ecosystem. They had long, long traditions of cultures that allowed them to not work as slaves, as we do, to have more time for the stories and the dances and the songs, and to appreciate that they were just part of nature and not above it and separate from it.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're going to really take the long view, what are our options and what are the likely possibilities? It's not fun or preferable to talk about some of the downsides of what we're facing, but I believe that if we don't look at the real possibilities of where these trends are indicating, then we're not going to be able to solve the problem. We have to start questioning everything and get beyond some of the things that have been handed to us, like the idea of progress being a product of Western civilization that is the pinnacle of not just human experience but all life. People need to start questioning these basic things and
figuring out ways to do it, huh?
Well, yeah, we have such changes ahead that we may as well bring it on sooner rather than later, and that will make for less pain later.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Jan, thank you so very much for joining us this afternoon. I know you need to get to your task force meeting. It's been a pleasure, and I look forward to seeing you at the EcoCity World Summit.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you, Deborah. And I will see you in April.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that is Jan Lundberg, who is speaking, as I said, at the EcoCity World Summit. I would highly recommend you looking into that organization or that event. It's coming up Earth Week. That's April, Earth Day Week, April 22nd through 26th in San Francisco. And they are convening an international community of inspired change makers and courageous individuals who are addressing the problems of the world's environment with thoughtful, long-range solutions. And you can find out more about them by going to EcoCityWorldSummit.org. And Jan Lundberg is with Culture Change, and you can talk to them or find out more about them by going to CultureChange.org. It's been great to be on the radio with you this afternoon. We've got some callers. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say real quick, I was thinking the same thing Jan was saying before he started saying it. Were happier when they had less. I remember my grandmother. I thought she was very rich. She was very poor.
Yeah.
But she made things. She went to the thrift shop. She had everything beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And the creativity that came out of her and the fun of it and what she taught all of us and how she would cook things and teach us and
mm-hmm.
and her gardening, and that's where the focus was. And
right.
I really thought she was very rich.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, in a way, this is kind of not a good thing, but a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
To get back to people, nature, I really think so.
Okay. That's a good, beautiful, positive way to think about it, Marianne. Thank you so much for that input.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Take care.
Okay. Have a great afternoon. Oh, and I keep losing that guest, and I'm so sorry. We have another caller who's been trying to call, and I keep dropping them. So excuse me, caller, for dropping you. Please do call back in. Spencer, you're getting frustrated with
no,
me.
No, not at all. No, it's all good. I can hear out of my right ear now.
Tomorrow on Tomorrow Matters, we've got Catherine Bachman, an astrologist, who's going to be talking about the fate of the Earth and those of us here in Monterey Bay, so you can listen in. And Spencer, thank you so much for coming in this afternoon
thank
and
you
helping
for having me, Deborah.
Me with the phones, even though I did keep losing people. I know that drives you absolutely crazy.
I'm fine. I'm calm. I'm relaxed.
And
I'm breathing deep.
Your ear is feeling better this
Much
afternoon?
Better.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Does your caller want to call back in?
I don't think so.
They're
I think three times is enough for him.
Who was that?
There was a random caller discussing politics and how we're going to get out of our dependence on oil.
Okay. And it was probably a really good caller.
It was a great caller. Lively conversation.
And I
all
lost
three times.
Them. No, I didn't lose them three times. Just twice.
What do you have to say there?
Well, I want to let you know that this show has been sponsored in part by Renovations, home of extraordinary design and remodeling. And they're proud to boast the number one certified green business in Carmel Valley. Through sustainable designs, Renovations promises to bring beauty and value beyond expectations, on time and on budget guaranteed. Give Renovations a call at 831-620-1700 or visit Renovations on their website at renovations.net and let them help you feel the excitement of getting something special. And this show is dedicated to Lisa Silva for her donation to Tomorrow Matters. And if you would like a show dedicated to you or someone you love, you can contact me at tomorrow@deborahlindsay.com.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you, Lisa, very, very much. But
totally
you know what? It's
it.
Important because this show...
I wasn't saying it wasn't important.
No, I know. I mean, I'm just talking with you about how important it is to support Tomorrow
really
Matters
is.
Because this show is teaching people some vital skills and giving them vital information to help, you know, move on into the future
right.
for
and,
a
and,
better tomorrow.
And we don't make any money off of this.
No. That's not true. Remember the secret. We're creating wealth, Spencer, by inviting people to support the show.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It was good. Okay.
And also, thank you all for giving us part of your day. Remember, tomorrow really does matter. Tell a friend and stay tuned now for the Peter B. Collins Show, which is coming up after the CBS News.
Shoulder, ready to hold spontaneous nourishment without notice, without needing virgin old growth disposable tableware. And when the cashier say paper or plastic, I say no, thank you. To ask questions about everything, I demonize, criticize, generalize, jeopardize, canonize, ostracize, memorize, advertise, or supersize. About everything I say I can't live without, about everything I stand for, sit for, work for, play for, pray for, pay for, live for. About everything I eat, buy, do, make, facilitate, drive, consume, produce, wear, think, value, believe, throw away, and leave behind. Do I care enough about peace to light myself on fire on Las Vegas Boulevard?